Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Welcome to another episode of Footnotes. There, that was a much better cadence. Last week it was like really draggy. It was like, it was terrible. So that was much better. We're back in the swing of things. We got Rob Croyle. Say hi, Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Molly Patterson.
Hello.
And Lauren Steele is joining us for the first time on Footnotes, making Yay! History. Say hi, Lauren.
Hello.
You have to use that voice for the rest of the podcast now.
Okay. Let's get going.
Oh my gosh, I love this. She's a natural. This is perfect.
This is.
We've had
fun.
Both Steels on here now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have. Steel and Steel.
Oh my goodness.
Couple of Steel.
Oh my goodness. We should get them both on the podcast sometime, just for funsies. Just to steal up the podcast.
Yes.
Good
That'd
stuff.
They could steal the show.
Ooh. Ooh, yes.
Oof. All right.
Do.
So let's dive right in here. We're going to start off with our discipleship moment of the week. We really need a possibly better title for that. I don't know. But for now, discipleship moment of the week.
We will work on that.
We'll work on that.
Yeah.
If you have suggestions for what we should call that, you can email us at info@missionridge.church. But we are going to interview Lauren. That's why she's here today, because she abandoned us to go like do a family reunion or something.
Hey, be nice.
Or I don't know, and go take some really cool photography up in Glacier this weekend.
They did try to experiment with some astrophotography for the first time.
Lauren Steele photography, if you're interested.
Out of this world photography is what that was. Oh man,
it's you're on a roll.
On a roll, a photography roll. Oh, man. Anyway, so because she wasn't here, we couldn't have her on stage as the sermon, like talking about discipleship, which was good because we didn't have any time because I preached way too long, like 26 minutes instead of 15 like I planned. It was fine. So we're like, let's put Lauren on the podcast. Let's talk about it here. She has a great story. So to start things, what did discipleship look like when you were growing up, Lauren? What did that look like for you?
It honestly... I was just talking about this with Molly last night. I had no idea what it like formally looked like. I didn't know what it was because I want to say it didn't happen. And if it was happening, I wasn't aware of it.
Just no idea.
No idea. When I was in high school, I remember somebody started, looking back now, I know they were trying to kick off a whole discipleship movement.
Sure.
And so they, you know, we had to fill out little questionnaires where things were interested in. They partnered us up with an adult in the church. And then we met up with them, you know, for a certain amount of time and like fellowshipped. Well, they didn't really do a good job explaining, like, that's what it was. So I thought I was just meeting up with this gal to learn about cake decorating. And now that I'm an adult, I'm like, oh, okay, I see what they were trying to do there, but I didn't know what it was.
Okay. All brought in on it.
So they missed somewhere. Something was missed.
Yeah,
the memo did not get through.
But I learned
subversive
how to decorate
discipleship.
Some cakes.
Subversive.
But you learned how to decorate cakes.
Ninja, yeah, ninja discipleship. They have no idea. No one sees it coming.
Yes.
Oh man. Perfect.
So, yeah, okay. That was my experience growing up. It wasn't until I was in college. Well, no, I was out of college. The church that I went to after I moved back to Missoula, that people started talking about discipleship. And I was like, oh, what is this? And so I thought I'd look into that more.
Okay. Okay. So growing up and then into college and then now into college, you were going to a different church and they were having a different conversation about this?
So my childhood church I went up to through, you know, high school. And then when the college that I went to or the church I was going to during college, it wasn't really a thing. So it just wasn't like on my mind, wasn't aware of it. And then it wasn't until I left college, started my career, moved back to Missoula, and the church that I joined then, that was when the conversation started.
Oh, okay. So then it started to shift.
Yeah, and that was kind of my first exposure to what that looks like. What is that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you'd probably heard, like, I mean, growing up, we hear the word, like, the Great Commission, like, go and make disciples of all nations. Like,
right.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well,
So when you hear the word discipleship, you're like, oh, I mean, it makes sense.
That means, yeah, that means go make a disciple of the nation, right? Yeah,
right.
Okay. I get that. So did you ever ask anyone to disciple you then?
I did, yes.
Okay, so what did that look like?
That was, we had kind of a go-to person at the church that we could go talk to, and I just went up to him. I said, hey, I'd like to be discipled. He had some people in mind and got me set up with this woman that was going to church, and we met for a couple of years, I want to say, and sometimes we'd just go for hikes. Sometimes we'd go through a book that was applicable to, you know, something that I was wanting to work on in my spiritual walk. And then we discuss that, or we just meet up for coffee, or, you know, we just built a relationship.
Nice.
Yeah.
Go do stuff together.
Mm-hmm. How old were you then?
I was mid-20s.
Mid-20s?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So then, who was the first person that you actually discipled intentionally?
So,
this is where the story gets good.
Yeah, so they're the same guy that I went and talked to, asking for a mentor or for a disciple. Discipler?
Yeah.
Discipler?
I don't know. Disciple, or a rabs? Disciple-y. Little r rabs?
Sure. Anyways, he approached me 1 year, probably about five years ago, I don't remember, but a good chunk of time ago.
A hot minute ago.
Yeah, and asked if I would be interested in discipling somebody, and I was a little intimidated by that first, because I felt like, I feel like everyone feels this way about it. Well, I need to have it all figured out first.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't got it figured out. Why would I, you know? But then I remember at one point hearing somebody say, well, discipleship is kind of like one beggar telling another where to find bread. And I was like, well, those two people are on the same terms. Like, they're both learning. Mm. They're both growing. Mm. Like,
right.
If you are thinking of that on like a spiritual, you know,
sure,
comparison. So I thought, well, you know, I could definitely learn from this experience as well. So I started discipling this gal, and yeah, so it's been about 4 or 5 years now.
That's a good chunk of time discipling someone.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
That's fantastic.
What is that? So what is that like for me? I have not discipled somebody continually for that long. Like, that's, you're putting me to shame here. So what has that looked like for you? And like, over the course of that relationship, how have you seen that change and grow?
So it's interesting, because it ebbs and flows. Is that the right term? Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, there will be times where we're meeting on a regular basis. We're going through a book. We're going through a study. We're meeting up for coffee. Mm. We're going for hikes. And then there's sometimes where life just gets busy, and then we kind of don't hear from each other for a while, and then we'll meet back up, and then we'll start going again, and we'll, you know, be meeting on a regular basis. And it's been interesting, just because when you're friends for that long, you end up just seeing, you're there for those moments where things change, for good and for bad.
Sure.
See each other grow. And I feel like I'm even, you know, because that's the other thing, is it's not just like, oh, I'm going to take on this person and I will teach them. And it's not that, you know, it's a relationship, and you're both learning from it, and you're both growing from it.
Mm. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Cause I mean, well, and you get to, as you said, like, life, you know, when stuff happens in life, and you get to go through that with the person.
Right.
Like, that's exactly what discipleship looks like.
Right.
And that's phenomenal. I would be fascinated to meet this person sometime. Just by the way, throwing that one out there. Like,
what age differences and what does she do? Like, give us some like demographics. Help us understand the relationship maybe a little bit more.
Well, when I first met her, she was a student at the university, and now she's, you know, working in town. Let's see, maybe about 5 years younger than me, six. I don't know how old. Let's see. Math is hard.
You've had a long day.
I would say about that. Yeah, like, sure. Give or sure. take.
That gives us an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a range.
So, mid-20s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, she was in her teens still when you guys first started?
No, she was in college.
She was in college.
She was last year or two of college.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, early 20s
mm-hmm.
when she started and,
yeah.
and late 20s now.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Is she married now or?
No.
Nope.
Nope.
Okay. I was just curious if that conversation, if you guys had a chance to have that kind of conversation where she made a transition that you'd gone through previously.
Right. Oh, maybe one day.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. No, that is fascinating. Mm-hmm. See, this is like, we needed to have this conversation for sure. This is such a good example of this.
But I mean, like, obviously, I feel like even if you're, you know, if you're married, like, or going into marriage, like, that's a big conversation. But then before that, like, there's always things that you're going through with relationships and,
oh, yeah.
and so stuff like that, you know, comes up yeah. and that's something that, yeah, like.
And you're further down the road than right. she is. So you can speak a little wisdom into that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So process wise, what have you drawn from? Was it simply your experience of being discipled by someone else or, you know, as you have discipled her? Or what have you looked at as kind of your example of how to disciple?
I think I kind of gleaned that from my relationship with the gal that was discipling me.
Okay.
So
that was most of it.
That was most of it.
Yeah.
And then I've actually kind of, so she and I did a lot of just going through books more than anything. And so we were doing that a lot at the beginning. When I was starting to disciple a gal, and then I, you know, was talking to my husband, Brandon, and he was talking about his past experiences with discipling and how it was more relational. They didn't go through books. It wasn't as formal.
Mm. Right.
And I realized, well, wait, there's like a whole spectrum here. And so I realized, well, we could start branching out and doing more stuff than just sitting down for coffee and discussing a chapter.
That's great.
Or whatnot. And so,
yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. No. But it's also one of those things where it can become very like habitual and
sure.
you're not really delving into sometimes like the tough conversations. Like, this is what's going on in my life. I don't know how to handle this in a biblical way or, you know.
Because you're just talking books.
Yeah, you're just talking sure. books. Like, the topic was already chosen.
So what I'm hearing you say is the relational piece brought in other conversations that you.
Yeah. And I think yeah. it also just deepens that relationship that you have together, which, you know, increases, like, it allows for you to be more vulnerable with each other, and it just deepens that relationship and makes it more genuine, I think.
Yeah, I think my first idea or thought of discipleship growing up, and especially having gone to Bible school 20 plus years ago, 25 years ago, I would describe it as a more sterile environment. Like, it's a one-way conversation. I'm going to share what I've learned from those who have invested mm-hmm. in me. It's a one-way conversation, and you don't really know me, and I really don't know you either.
I'm teaching, you're learning.
Yeah, didactic yeah. in nature. Let's grab the right book. Hmm. And by book, I mean, you know, someone else's ideas on what the scriptures mean instead of, you know, what I... You know, instead of us opening the scriptures together and wrestling together through that. But also having that context of our lives, both of us, you know, and I love what you said there too about the fact that you've learned a lot through this process. I mm-hmm. think that is true. I think we do learn a lot through the process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We gain immeasurably. Because there's things that I can learn something from everybody if I'm open to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, and I think the really one-way street sort of concept of discipleship, of that it's I'm teaching, you're learning, you know, and we're gonna, it's the student teacher sort of relationship. You do see some of that biblically, like, obviously, like, they're referring to Jesus as teacher, like, there's some of that relationship, but like, there's also a whole lot when we look at them that the disciples have a very different relationship, in that they're like, Jesus is asking them questions and then letting them struggle through things and figure it out, not just telling them, like, oh, this is the way it is.
Right.
Like,
right.
They're figuring stuff out, and he's observing a lot of times and then taking them on field trips, if you will, where they're going to figure things out.
I'm thinking of some situations where, like, I'll be sitting there and I'll say, should I point this out? Should I point this out? I feel like I really need to point this out. And then I'll realize, I'm just going to, like, kind of wait for this to pan out. Like, how, you know, how, maybe it's a situation she's trying to figure out how to handle. And I'll just kind of wait and see. And then, but it's a struggle sometimes. Like, because sometimes we can always put our opinion out there. But I think sometimes there is wisdom in holding back. And so that's an area where I've learned too, is okay, is now a time for me to maybe bring something up, or is this a time for me to sit back and watch and then just kind of wait for God to do his part?
I mean, we're talking about that in care groups this week with the passage that we messed up on the bulletin, but it's the where Paul is talking in chapter 19 to the 12 that he's making disciples of. And he asks them questions there. And so in care groups, we're talking about what's the importance of asking good questions. Well, Paul could have just told them, like, right off the bat and just been like, this. But because he asks those good questions, he has it's a much better approach. And so, like, when you're saying, like, oh, do I need to, like, it? And it is a wrestling match because, yeah, sometimes you need to speak some truth.
Right.
Other times, like, nope, we're going to let him wrestle with this one and watch it. We're going to watch and monitor. And then if we need to step in, then you're there for it, you know?
Well, I found, like, with my kids, if I tell them they're doing something wrong, they respond differently than if I, like, ask them, like, how are you training your heart right now? And they will be like, oh, and they'll sit there and, like, process it a little bit more. I mean, sometimes they're, you know, Calvin and Hobbes.
Sometimes they're
situation.
Kids.
And they get cheeky back. But usually I'm like, are you training your heart now? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay. Like, so asking them the questions, I find, does help. But knowing when to say questions and when to make a comment.
Right.
Yeah.
But working in childcare, I learned, like, natural consequences are always your friend as a teacher.
Always.
So.
Yeah, and I think, and so I guess one of the thoughts I have about about this whole conversation at large is I've seen discipleship have two extremes. And I think a mixture is actually what we're looking for. And the two extremes would be so much relationship that the Bible never gets in the conversation.
Sure. Yeah, and there's no teaching.
No teaching.
It's just, yeah, we're just hanging out.
We're just hanging out. You know, you're a believer, I'm a believer, we believe, you know, but no teaching. That's not what we're talking about. And the other extreme is so much study, so many book studies, so many, you know, handing of books out and with a dearth of relationship, where I don't really know what's going on in your world and you don't even know what's going on in my world.
Yeah.
And I think those two extremes, not the example that we see in Jesus. Jesus was life on life with people. Did he teach them? Absolutely. But he spent 3 years, 24/7. Now, obviously we can't do that, but we should bridge that gap some way, shape, or form.
It is much more difficult to have that sort of relationship today.
And figure out how to be in each other's world so I can see what you're like as a father, what you're like as a husband, what you're like as a worker, what you're like when you're under stress. You know, get in your world enough. But also to be known in the process too. It's not this one-way conversation. It's this mutual conversation.
No, through this whole thing I've been thinking, because I was like, I haven't really discipled anyone, but then as I'm sitting there, like, I'm like, oh, this person and that person, and like, I didn't like purposely go out and be like, I'm going to disciple you. I'm just like, hey, I've been there, I understand where you're at, do you want to, like, can I bring you along with me as I figure out my next steps, but I'll walk with you through yours.
I've always felt like there are some situations where it just organically happens. But it's not formally labeled discipleship. But that's what it is.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I think going back to what you're saying, like the relationship and the biblicalness, like knowing where you fall on that spectrum. Like, I know I tend to be more on the relational side. Like, I share about my faith and like what God's done in my life and for me, but I'm not like on that side. I'm more on the relational side with people when I'm doing discipleship and trying to like make sure I am also still trying to pull in biblical truths as I'm walking.
Yeah, and I think we do have a tendency to swing to one side or the other. Mm-hmm. And we have to recognize that, you know, for me, I could talk about the Bible a lot and forget to plug, actually engage relationally and do that from context, you know. And it sounds like for you, bringing the Bible into your conversation more is maybe something that you have to be more intentional with. So, mm-hmm. you know, we may have to figure out what area do we need to be intentional with.
Well, and that's the intentional part of discipleship is saying, okay, I have my natural proclivities, right? I'm like you, Molly. I'm going to naturally be more relational and not, I'm less bookish. Like, I'll go study on my own. I don't want to do a study. I'm not going to naturally like, let's go do a study together. No, that's not my thing. Now, if we just, you know, like, if we're studying stuff, we can get into conversation. Sure, it might come up, but it's going to be out of the relationship side. So for me, like, I have to be intentional about bringing in that study side and bringing in the, like, let's bring in some biblical truth. Let's apply some of this stuff. Let's figure out where you need to grow in that. Mm-hmm. But that's part of being intentional is figuring out where that person needs to grow and identifying, like, oh, hey. And not necessarily pointing it out like, oh, hey, you need to grow here. But saying like, since we have this relationship, I'm going to steer us on the path. I'm going to steer us over here because I know that you need to go here. Like, I can see that in you. You need some of this. You need to go through, you know, you need to be on a boat and go through a storm or something. So like that's part of the being intentional about this that I think that's as we continue to look at what discipleship looks like, that figuring out where you can be intentional is huge in this.
Yeah. Well, I think about my parents because with us kids, they never put pressure on us to have like good grades or anything. Like, I was a B, C student and my parents were fine with that.
Before Christ?
Yeah. No. Yeah. But like my two youngest siblings, they expected higher grades from them because they were able to achieve that. My brother Seth and I were just like, school was not taught to us. Like, we just, weren't the book school type people. So they never expected us to get like straight A's or whatever. But as they watched us grow, they always kind of like helped like, okay, well, I see this strength in you and this strength in you. And like, they told me from a very early age, I could see you being a teacher. And I always was like, I'm never going to be a teacher. I'm not going to school to go back to school. I'm never doing it.
Never seen that.
And I went to school to be a preschool teacher. So it's like, I don't know. Like,
watching. Which you are good at that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Despite the fact that you still want to rebel against it. It's fine. It's fine. I wouldn't understand that at all.
No.
No, I haven't been down that at all. That's funny. Cool. Let's see. Lauren, you were like, I don't know what I'm going to see this conversation. Great. This was fantastic. Like, we've been talking for like forever and a day on this. This is absolute gold. You all are welcome. But let's dive into some tasty footnotage. Maybe even some toenail clippings.
Toenails or fingernails.
That's when we really get off into the weeds. I've decided that's not a footnote. That's a toenail clipping. Anyway, so first thing we want to talk about, I kind of glossed over this in the sermon. We're talking Paul heading off to Antioch. Okay, so he converts in 13. This is a first missionary journey. He converts Sergius Paulus, who is the
proconsul.
There was another funky version in KJV, or the KJV had a different word for that. We use that for care group because it's way more fun to hear Josh read it in KJV. Side note, the diatribe that Paul goes on where he's like ripping on Bar Jesus in King James is so good. You should go read
it, like,
this.
Shakespearean insults.
It's phenomenal. Go find the meaning of this. But
and doesn't Bar mean son?
Something like it. Yeah, it's like his name meant Jesus, or well, his name meant magician or something.
Son of Jesus.
Yeah, think, son of Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah, because Bar Jonah means son of Jonah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, so son of Jesus. So that's so it's kind of an interesting thing. They, I don't know if he's referring to Jesus, who is our mm-hmm. Messiah, or referring to some other Jesus.
Yeah, I don't. But, I don't know because that comes from Jesus came from Yeshua, which is a Joshua. Mm. It branched like it was a version of that. I think if I remember
right,
correctly.
I think it was a fairly common name.
Yeah, it wasn't completely uncommon, but yeah, I don't know. There's definitely more to that story that you could dig in, and I mean, we're taking a 20,000-foot view on a lot of these.
Acts just is to a get very through. Long book.
It is, and to get through it as fast as we are, we were
mm-hmm.
I feel flying like through stuff.
Most churches that do a sermon or a series on Acts, it takes them a couple years.
Well, let that never be the case with us. 10 weeks. We're like Barry Allen over here, speeding through it. Anyway, so Paul converts, I guess, Sergius Paulus, right? Which this is where we get the name change in this chapter 13. Like this is where they start, and his who was also called Paul, right?
Right.
This is right as he's this Sergius Paulus. Like I
formally
hope you're catching. There's a direct correlation here that's
right.
just on the nose, like. This is his first convert, and then his name, he changes it to this. Very strange. Possibly something there. But he heads directly to this Antioch in Pisidia. Now, as I said, there was like 17 billion Antiochs. I think there was actually 17, if I remember right. But there was two big ones, Antioch in Syria and Antioch Pisidia. Okay, Antioch in Syria is much larger. It was... I want to say it might have been upwards of 1 million people by some estimates. You want to double check me on that to be sure. But I know it was six digits. Like it was a big number of people in this Antioch in Syria. And there was a lot of the church that was based out of there. A lot of Paul's journeys kicked off from there. The second and the third, if I remember correctly, kicked off from there. But he goes to this Antioch in Pisidia, which is not big. It's like 5,000, 8,000 people. This is, how big is Hamilton? Do you remember off the top of your head?
I'm very bad with numbers.
Same.
But I'm great with people.
Okay, well, that's a number of people. It's a number of people. I don't know. Insert your favorite 5,000, 8,000 person town. I'm thinking of Wendell or maybe Gooding. Back home for me.
4,728 as of 2017.
In Hamilton. Perfect. We're going to imagine Hamilton for this.
Okay.
Okay. This is like, and I use this example, which Marty gave to me. This is, a lot of this was coming from Marty. So he said that this is like the Reagans, the Bushes, the Clintons, the Rockefellers, the Kennedys, all of these like big, well, maybe the Reagans, because they were kind of, these long-established names in American politics, right? It's as if these families all had ties to Hamilton, this one little, tiny little town, right? And it's in podunk nowhere.
Yeah.
Galatia was like the Styx. Insert deliverance. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, this is, they go up there to be, you know, like, this is out in the middle of nowhere. And the reason they planted these Antioch cities in a lot of ways was to westernize, because they couldn't conquer Galatia in the normal sense.
Yeah.
It was a lot of guerrilla warfare through there, right? So the Roman Empire just had a ton of trouble there. So what they did was they're like, we're not going to conquer. We're just going to make a peace treaty with you, right? We're going to be okay with you, right?
Infiltrate from the inside.
And we're going to plant a ton of McDonald's, right? We're going to westernize you, if you will. This is like us planting McDonald's over in Asia. Like China has how many McDonald's now?
Yeah.
Like we're slowly the culture bleeds in.
Yeah.
And we're gonna make you Roman.
They want to get to 2 billion served.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna get to 2 billion served. that was a good one. So this is Antioch in Pisidia. It's this tiny little outpost, like, but a lot moves through there. If you look at the map, it is kind of on a trade route, kind of. And if you look up the city, there's a lot of history to it. It wasn't they didn't start it. They built the city on another city that had been conquered.
Which is quite typical of that.
Oh yeah, very common. But this city had all of these ties, like Brutus, Nero, two of Augustus's generals had ties there, Mark Antony. There was like eight big names that came out of this, like had ties, came out of this town and are recorded, and they know it archaeologically, like it's recorded on like a stone there that they've found like eight names on this thing.
Wow.
Incredible. But this is where Sergius Paulus came from. There's some debate about this, a little speculation, thus it's in footnotes, that Paul heads up to this town because he's trying to go because of Sergius Paulus's family, or because he's going to get these big names, which I threw out trickle-down evangelism. We use a little Reaganism, trickle-down economics. Trickle-down evangelism. We're going to convert the heads of state, and then that's going to just change everything. Everybody's going to love Jesus. Disciples of all nations,
done.
Three simple steps. Step one, heads of the nations. Step two, trickle down. Step three, prosper. All right. So this is...
three-step plan.
Three easy steps. This is a possible theory, which I really think makes sense because he also really wants to go to Rome.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, Paul, why do you really want to go to Rome? You're going to die. Like Rome had, and we're told Rome had just like sent all the Jews out. Like this is how Priscilla and Aquila, like they left because they were told to leave. Like all the Jews, like I forget which Caesar it was. The Caesar like told them all to leave. Like all the Jews are gone. Like get out of here. We're tired of your shenanigans. Leave, be gone. And so like, why is Paul going to Rome? This is ridiculous. Doesn't make any sense. No. Which you're going to talk a little bit about this week.
Right.
Because you're covering, Rob, this week you're finishing up the series in Acts, and we're covering that last bit of Paul going to Rome, because that kind of finishes up the book of Acts, where he ends up in jail for a ton. But, like, it doesn't make sense that he wants to go to Rome. My theory. My opinion.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make... Well, it's not a safe bet to go there.
Let's put it that way. No, definitely not safe. But, like, it would make sense. This is his first convert is this big wig.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, that worked. I'm gonna go get all these other ones.
Kind of went to his head there.
Kind of saw it with Cornelius. He's probably heard about Cornelius, like this, that Peter got this kind of big guy and it trickled down to the rest of his family, right? He's probably like, oh, dude, I'm just gonna go get Caesar. I'm gonna get Caesar and I'm gonna win.
And his discipleship doesn't really become effective until he's willing to make tents.
Mm-hmm. And slow down.
And slow down, yeah. And just, you know, sit in people's, sit in the mess with people, and do life with them.
And he's not, and when he starts to make disciples, when we see him finally make disciples, he's not making disciples of really bigwigs now.
Mm. No.
He's making disciples of tent makers, like you said, and Timothy. Who's a mumser? Which segues us to talking about that. Woo, that was sweet.
Nicely done.
It's the coffee.
I'm sensing that from you right now.
I'm drinking coffee. And we're recording this at like 5 in the afternoon.
I'm getting a little buzzy.
It's going to be a fun worship practice after this. We're going to get lit.
Holy Spirit will be there.
The Holy Spirit is going to be moving. Maybe as fast as me. Zing. All right. So let's talk about mumsers. Now we've seen the term mumser before. Probably you've probably heard this reading through scripture or heard people reference to as a mumser. No, Lauren's shaking her head. No, never heard of this. Never heard of this. Okay, so Timothy is a mumser. Rob, do you have the definition of this pulled up?
Like, is it a man or a muppet?
It's a mumser. So I'm pulling this from the JewishEncyclopedia.com, which is like the 1904, or like this is an old encyclopedia that is available online, which is super cool. I pull this up from time to time if I want to see a little different perspective. But I looked up mumser and said it said to look up bastard. So I looked up bastard. In the English use of the word, a child neither born nor begotten in lawful wedlock, an illegitimate child. It says here, there's no Hebrew word of like meaning. The mamzer rendered bastard in the AV is something worse than an illegitimate child. He is the offspring of a father and mother between whom there could be, in law, no binding betrothal, issuing either from adultery between a married woman and a man other than her husband, or from incest within the forbidden degrees of kinship or affinity defined in Leviticus. The child of a marriage simply forbidden, as that between a Cohen and a divorced woman, is legitimate but profane. That is, a son can not officiate as a priest. A daughter is not eligible to marry a priest. So, like, so anytime
you are a second-rate citizen for sure, maybe third.
Yeah, anytime the law of God as defined in Leviticus in particular is broken between a man and a woman, and an offspring comes out of that, that person is cut off.
They are known as a mumser.
Yes.
Okay. And so,
which is sad because it wasn't like they had control over the situation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's the worst part about
that's
this.
That's a bum deal.
So Timothy, we're told Timothy is a mumser. Now,
he just had no place because he didn't fit with the Jews. He didn't fit with
his
the
mother.
Greeks.
His mother's a Jew, but his father was a Gentile. This is how, like, he's married. Like, she had a kid outside of, we don't know if she married him, what happened there, if she was raped by, and he's the son of a Gentile via rape. We don't know.
We do know that he has a godly grandmother and mother.
Yes, yes. So we do know that. And we know that, like, obviously he's raised in the faith. He knows his text as much as he can. Like, they're not going to let him read in synagogue or anything like that. He's going to be not quite as bad as a Samaritan, but definitely not okay.
Well, if he wasn't circumcised prior to Paul showing up.
Yeah, they didn't accept him as a, like, he they're
he'd
gonna look
have
at
no
him
no standing within the temple system.
Yeah, he's gonna be like a Theosebes. He's gonna be
at
like
best.
A yeah. He's gonna be like a God fearing Gentile.
Can we just point out the fact how cool it is that, like, Paul was, like, high up and he looked and he had compassion on this poor guy that had no home.
Oh, sure.
And brought him in. I just think that's
well,
cool.
Yeah, and he had no standing within the sacrificial system of the temple. And yet he is a key component.
Sure.
You know, he's a priest, basically, or a pastor.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that going into these cities, they're probably gonna know of Paul. Mm-hmm. Or they're gonna know of who trained him, or they're gonna have connections there and give him a lot of respect, like, which is why he gets to speak in all these synagogues a lot of times. Like, they're asking him to. But for him to see compassion on Timothy and be like, yeah, no, you come along with me. Like, he saw this potential in this kid that's everybody else had looked over. Now, a lot of times it's taught that Paul circumcises him so that it's not an issue, like, so that it's not a stumbling block for the Jews, like, so that we don't have to worry about this, right? Because they've just determined, like, oh, no, you don't need to be circumcised, like, to be in. So why does he circumcise Timothy?
He goes back to that, yeah.
That's not correct. Like, it, like, that's a, like, there's no way that the Jews wouldn't have lost their minds over this. Like, they would have been like, wait, you circumcised a mumser?
Yeah.
They would have been up in arms and pissed. Like, this is like, no, what did you just do? This is like them saying that the Gentiles are in.
Yeah.
Like, worse. I don't even know. Like, they would have been all up in arms. So to say, like, he did this so that, like, he wasn't going
to
make waves, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like, he's using, like, this is directly in their face, like, no, this kid's in.
Well, it was the covenant of Abraham. And so to give it to this kid that's neither, in neither location, basically,
yeah,
is
slap in the face. Generations.
Like he's full on in here. Mm-hmm. Like that for me, like I'm like, oh, I love that. Like Paul's got some chutzpah there. We're seeing that. And that's so much better because if you're Timothy and you're like, wait, we got to do this just to, this sucks. Like, that's not comfortable. Why? Are you sure we got to do this? But if we're doing it to stick it to the man, I'm much more on board. Like, all right, let's do this thing.
Well, and to kind of like stake a claim on like, no, you were part of this too. Yeah. Like,
and to be able to, like, you have a place.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's...
I'm speaking as a rabbi and I'm giving you a home.
So listen to this verse out of Deuteronomy 23:2. No one born of a forbidden union may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of his descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord.
Oh, that reminds me. There's an exception. Because Saul and David were both not past the 10th generation because they're like somewhere you track back. You track back their lineage and like one of their previous like David's grandmother or something was a Moabite or grandfather was a Moabite or something, right?
Ruth was a Moabite.
Yes, that's it. Ruth is a Moabite. So you go down this generation thing and he's not past the 10th. So he shouldn't have been able to be in and he's the king of Israel.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, mumsers. And they're like, well, there's this one exception. Yeah. And they do that with David and I think with Saul also.
Well, they have Rahab.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the genealogy. The women who slept with their father are like, that's where we get the Moabites, isn't it?
Oh, with Lot?
Yeah, with Lot.
It might have been. I don't remember.
Moabites. And there's even some thought, if you look at Psalm 51, David says that he was conceived in sin.
Mm-hmm.
And when the prophet came to anoint him, his father didn't bring him forward.
Mm.
He was out in the field.
Yeah, no, because he wouldn't have been.
And so, so there's some thought. I've never heard that.
That's cool.
There's some thought that he was born illegitimately. And so he was like, I'm not bringing him forward to be.
So Paul was acting like God in this situation of like looking down on somebody and being like, no, you get to have a home. I'm bringing you into the genealogy of Jesus.
Right.
Yeah, I'm bringing you into the fold. And then we see Timothy do some great things, like even though he's young.
Yeah.
So, not that I identify with him at all.
So maybe it's the heart after God that is actually the issue.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good. That is so good. I love that. So mumsers. There you go, Lauren.
The more you know.
You didn't know you were getting into this, did you?
I didn't know. I'm learning so much this over is wonderful. Here in my wonderful. Little corner.
They also pronounce it mamsers. Mamsers. I've seen it. Spelled both ways, M A M and M U M Z E R.
Okay, so it is a Z.
Yeah.
Autocorrect had no idea how to spell that, so there was a lot of stabs at it.
To find it in the Orthodox Jewish Bible, I had to spell it as Mamzer, M A M Z E R.
Mamzer.
But in the Orthodox or in the Jewish encyclopedia is Mumzer.
Okay. Well, and they are up kind of in, you know, it's up there in that northern hick shtick. So we're going to give it Mamzer. All right. Last thing we wanted to talk about was Paul really kind of getting into Rome, but we kind of talked about that already.
Yeah.
Did anybody, Molly, you had something that you wanted, you had a thought on this.
I had a thought on this.
Of why God keeps making Paul wait.
Well, because when he first started out, I think he was like, I mean, I think he had good intentions, but he had too much zeal and he didn't have the wisdom yet. And so he was out trying to make king, like, what is the, not kingdom, but empire. He's trying to make empire and God didn't want that. And he was trying to get him to do something different. So then when he started like actually seeing people and seeing where they were and worrying about just, you know, the common folk, I say that in quotations. Then he started caring about the kingdom and making it different. And so God, he started having to make relationships. He started discipling the, like, instead of being over here on just the biblical or just being on relation, he was combining
meeting
the
in the middle. Sure.
So if he had left for Rome when he wanted to, he wouldn't have the community in order to help him get through his time in Rome and like he wouldn't have people to deliver his letters. He needed people to deliver letters for him and come get them and just administer to him in jail. So for me, like I was sitting listening and I'm like, there's been points in my life that like really hard things have happened and I've had to make hard decisions. And like I was at a point in Moscow where I had to, but I didn't because I knew I didn't have a community yet. I didn't go to my Rome yet. And like here, when I've had to make a hard decision, I had my community that I needed in order to get through my time in quote unquote Rome and being stuck there. And so it's, I can sit in my mess of where I'm at, but I have people around me to make sure I can get through that time.
Yeah. 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 When I think of what you're saying, as far as of kingdom versus
empire versus shalom.
Yeah. Empire versus shalom. And the people that we know that Paul witnessed to that heard his message were the guards, were the guys chained to him.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and they're the ones nothing's recorded about his, within scriptures at least, nothing's recorded about his interaction with Caesar himself.
Mm-hmm.
Luke didn't find that important. The other letters, the other accounts that we see, don't find it important to talk about that engagement.
Because, you know, that's not important. Like him talking to the head of the Roman Empire. Like, no.
It's fine.
Meh. Not that important.
It's the wrong king.
Just that we're going to talk about him and these guards.
Yeah.
That right there should tell us something.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's an implication in that. I don't know. You can figure it out.
How does God want to move his kingdom forward? And we do know that the kingdom did move forward through Constantine later.
Sure.
But there was many problems brought to the forefront as solutions, I think. Mm. So Christianity started to really take on a more of a politicized
tone. And we saw that back in our Lent series where the king and the revolution, right? We talked a lot about empire versus shalom and Jesus looking different and Jesus's kingdom looking different, right? And I think one of our implications back then was you can't build God's kingdom with Rome's tools, right?
Right.
And you can't, like, you just can't do that. You can't use this empire closed fist approach to build trickle down evangelism, if you will.
It's like that come doesn't from the ground up.
It doesn't build God's kingdom that way.
No.
That's not how it spreads. We see that over and over and over again. That is not how God's kingdom spread. It's through discipleship. It's through one person at a time.
Yeah, if you head off in a certain direction to build God's kingdom and you see God nowhere in any of that, you might be down the wrong path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't have any implications for today. None whatsoever.
None.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Perfect. Well, we have been recording for not quite an hour. I'm not going to have to edit this one down at all, Rob, because my counter says we've been 55 minutes here, and we had a little bit at the beginning, so it's still not our hour and 6 minute fiasco that I had to slice and dice. So this is perfect. This is perfect. Anybody got any closing thoughts that we need to add on? Laura, anything?
Not that I can think of.
Okay.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's been a hoot.
Yeah. It's been fun.
Yeah. Molly only cringed a little bit when you said bastard.
I know.
It's literally the definition. It's fine.
I know. I didn't say stop.
It was a soft
enough
edge.
I didn't kibash it when you guys started talking about it. Just got to make sure you guys don't go too far.
Oh man, we have too much fun.
We do.
This is so much better when it's not just you and me.
Oh, I know.
I've missed being
man.
Here. I've missed
this
being
is
here.
Good.
Guys.
This is good. I vote we never do it with just you and me again.
We need more voices.
That's.
Well, you can have.
I love you, Rob. I need
future.
More voices in this.
Yes.
Just bring Brandon and I on. We'll
just all the time. We'll just Brandon and Lauren all the time. Ooh, now I want Girl Scout cookies.
Ooh.
Little tag alongs. There great. We go. That coffee's getting me good.
Yeah.
You are buzzing.
So much better. All right. Well, glad that you could join us for this episode. It's been a fun one.
Have a great
week. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything, hit us up, info@missionridge.church, and you feel free to join us on a Sunday at the Hilton Garden Inn, 10:30 a.m. or wherever else we're meeting, because, you know, we might move, but you can find that out on our website. So we'll see you later.
Peace. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.